Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, this is Michael. Before we begin with the local news, we have a programming notice. Because of the winter weather and for safety reasons, our volunteers did not come in to read today. Those volunteers who are able to record remotely did so. For that reason, we do not have the Midland Reporter Telegram from Saturday or the Odessa American from Sunday. We will read those as the week progresses and put those stories on the air for you. Today's broadcast is 1 hour. Following the hour of local news, we will substitute with today's New York Times newspaper. Thank you for your understanding.
Hi, this is Linda. I'm reading the Odessa American for Saturday, January 28th, 2023. Section A. HR director says Hallmark has no recourse. Downtown Odessa director angry and disappointed with determination. By Kim Smith. The city of Odessa's human resource director doesn't believe downtown Odessa director Casey Hallmark has any recourse against a board member accused of bad-mouthing her on Facebook. In a two-page memo to interim city manager Agapito Bernal and interim city attorney Dan Jones, Charles Hurst notes Tisha Crow is not an employee of the city or the downtown Odessa board. In addition, the city's illegal harassment policy doesn't ban actions involving political affiliation. Lastly, Hurst said Hallmark's boss, Bernal, has no authority to sanction the conduct of a board member, since the board is comprised of individuals appointed and approved by members of the city council. Hurst also suggests it is normal for there to be some contention between Hallmark and her board members. A review of Hallmark's job duties, on the other hand, includes multiple examples of her obligation to establish and maintain productive relationships with a variety of constituencies, including the board. While fulfilling that expectation may prove to be difficult in some circumstances, it would seem to be naive to expect that meeting, that expectation, will be free from contention at all times, Hurst wrote. Crow, who is also the Ector County Republican Party chairwoman, did not immediately respond to an email sent Friday. Hallmark learned of Hurst's email through the Odessa American. I never got that response. I have heard nothing since the 15th when I emailed them. They've not contacted me. They've not emailed me. They've not explained anything to me. When you sent that to me, that was the first I've ever heard of it, and it is absolutely ridiculous that I would have to hear from the city through the media, Hallmark said. While she remains glad she spoke up for herself, she's angry about the result. How do they expect downtown to move forward and grow when I know that this board member is publicly bashing me and calling me a disgrace on social media? There's no recourse for her actions, but I'm just supposed to move along, shut up, and keep going. Don't make a fuss. Just take it, Hallmark said. I complained because I feel like at some point something has to be said and someone has to speak up for the way that we're being treated. If nothing comes of it, it is what it is. I'm not comfortable with that. I don't agree with that. Hallmark filed a complaint with Hurst, Jones, and Bernal about Crow on January 15th, 1 month after she made headlines for speaking out against the December 13th terminations of city attorney Natasha Brooks and city manager Michael Marrero. During that meeting, Hallmark alleged Mayor Javier Hoven called her a crazy liberal, and that he also told her the police department is full of murderers and she needed to watch her back. She also alleged newly elected council member Chris Haney screamed at her at the Parade of Lights event about the banner being used for his vehicle. Haney took Councilmember Denise Swanner's spot as an ex officio member of the Downtown Odessa Board at the same December 13th meeting. Haney then appointed Crow to the Downtown Odessa Board January 3rd. When Haney objected during the January 10th City Council meeting to those allegations being made part of the record, Hallmark again addressed the council, but this time she was more explicit. She quoted him as using the F word during the exchange. In her version of the event, Hallmark said Haney told her, "I am not an expletive council person. I am an expletive council man, and I will be referred to as such," Hallmark said. Haney denied the allegation, citing his Christian faith. He said he merely told Hallmark he prefers to be addressed as councilman. "I was accused of being a bully, intimidating, and screamed at by a young lady, and I would like it to be known right here, I don't yell," Haney said during last week's council meeting. "I don't have anybody to yell at. I don't have any reason to yell." The city of Odessa hired the law firm of Davidson Sheen to investigate the alleged incident, and depositions are underway. Davidson Sheen's billing rate is $375 an hour, and the associate attorney rate ranges from $195 to $250 an hour. Hallmark's use of the F word sparked an outcry on social media with the Odessa's Accountability Project and several others, calling for Hallmark to be disinvited from a January 18th Ector County Republican Women's event, where she'd been invited to speak about downtown Odessa's successful year. The Post stated, "Hallmark's recent behavior makes her appear unhinged and out of touch with reality." A follow-up post that accused Hallmark of carrying out a plan to sue the city and make a quick buck. Hallmark backed out of the event and filed her complaint about Crow because Crow liked the original post and chimed in on it. In one post, Crow complained, "Dropped the F-bomb in council. She is a disgrace." Crow also liked many of the comments blasting Hallmark's actions at the council meetings, including one in which someone falsely claimed Hallmark trashed our police force and called them murderers. It isn't the first time Jamie Foreman, who launched the Odessa Accountability Project Facebook page, has objected to actions taken by Hallmark. In late November, Foreman sent Hallmark, Marrero, Hoven, Swanner, and City Council member Mark Mata an email questioning why Hallmark would align herself with Odessa whistleblowers. A Facebook page that made salacious accusations against Hoven and Mata. She also attached a screenshot showing Hallmark was friends with the page and screenshots of the actual accusations. Hallmark had also gotten sideways with Swanner over the Parade of Lights banners. According to emails obtained by the Odessa American under the Texas Public Information Act, Hallmark emailed council members on November 22nd, telling them downtown Odessa wanted to give them the VIP treatment and showed them what their banners would look like. Swanner responded, "Will you have them done as councilman or councilwoman? Councilperson is proper." When Hallmark said they'd researched past banners and discovered they'd always used councilperson, Swanner responded, "My request wasn't a question. I would like to be referred to as council member or councilwoman." Mata, in the same thread, took the opportunity to tell Hallmark he was disappointed because she was friends with Odessa whistleblowers whose sole purpose is to try to discredit myself, Councilmember Denise Swanner, and Mayor Javier Hoven. While you are free to do as you like on social media, I am also free to respond accordingly. Mata said he regretted canceling his participation in a race in order to pretend to attend the parade and support downtown Odessa. He declined her offer of a banner. I have my own banner and will have family members carrying the banner. According to a public information coordinator with the City of Odessa, the Communications Department, Legal Department, and City Secretary's Office could not locate any social media policies governing city employees. Building Communities. OHFC Dedicated to Affordable Housing by Kim Smith. Think you can't afford a decent place to live and groceries? You're not alone, but Jill Miller and Ashley Aminette are doing their best to prove you wrong. The two women hold the top two positions at Odessa Housing Financial Corporation, an organization that has been devoted to building affordable homes in Odessa since 1979. The organization started under the auspices of the City of Odessa and later became a separate organization that has continued to partner with the city, various other organizations, and lenders. They converted Lincoln Towers, a former hotel that was in foreclosure, into a retirement community. They built the first apartments on the UTPB campus, and they've built 300 houses all over town. Odessa Housing Financial Corporation, OHFC, is also responsible for the estates on 87th Street, a 181-unit apartment complex, and the newly opened Vera Apartments on Highway 191. In addition, OHFC is also in the process of having a 200-unit apartment complex built for seniors over 62 and disabled people over 55. They'll start taking applications for it in May, and folks can expect to move in late July or early August. To give you an idea of just how eager people are for affordable housing, Miller said the apartments on 87th have a 5-year waiting list and has had since the day it opened. OHFC hopes to add at least another 250 units to the property soon. Vera Apartments, which just held its grand opening in December, only has 58 of its 288 units left, she said. Here's the way it usually works. Thanks to the Housing Finance Act passed in 1979, OHFC can issue bonds, and organizations, usually banks, buy the bonds to get a tax credit, Miller said. OHFC then takes the money they earn off the bonds, and with an FHA loan making up the difference, they build homes or apartment complexes. The homes are then sold, or the apartments are then rented to people who qualify for them based on their earnings and a complicated formula involving median average incomes, Miller said. The beauty of the Vera Apartments is they are located within the city limits of Odessa, but they're in Midland County, where the median average income is higher. Which means for us, for the first time, we have teachers, firefighters, and police officers who can make more money and live here because we went off Midland's income, Miller said. The rents range from $543 to $1,700 at Vera, Miller said. Some people have a misconception about affordable housing, especially when it comes to apartments, Miller said. They may immediately think about projects depicted in Hollywood movies where the apartments are poorly built, cramped, run down, and inhabited by criminals. Nothing could be further from the truth when it comes to 87th and Vera, she said. Each apartment is roomy, and has granite countertops, some hardwood flooring, walk-in closets, a pantry, stainless steel appliances, garbage disposals, dishwashers, and washers and dryers. Their residents are also vetted, Miller said. No one with an arrest record can qualify. We do everything we can to make them want to live here and to make them as proud of this community as we are, Miller said. That's what happened at 87th, and we believe it'll happen here at Vera. Both apartment complexes have playgrounds, a dog park, and barbecue grills, and a state-of-the-art clubhouse with Wi-Fi, a fully outfitted 24-hour fitness center, and kitchen. They also have a conference room and education center. For the price of a refundable $50 fee, residents can rent the clubhouse, which is available to residents during business hours the rest of the time. But what makes 87th and Vera extraordinary are the programs Aminette has put together for them with the help of a lot of community partners, Miller said. Students can come in after school for snacks, thanks to the USDA and the West Texas Food Bank, hop on computers to do their homework, and receive tutoring from volunteers from the Ector County Independent School District, the local colleges, and the complex itself. There's also an after-school summer program, and they partnered with the Ellen Noel Art Museum and D.R. Horton to put on a 6-week art program. Their parents can attend adult education programs, Miller said. OHFC formed its own nonprofit organization that offers credit counseling and homebuyer education classes the residents can take advantage of, Miller said. They've also offered financial literacy classes by partnering with banks and free health screenings and health classes by partnering with Medical Center Hospital and Odessa Regional Medical Center. Every quarter we try and do something different, Miller said. We want you to be physically fit, but with credit counseling and financial literacy, we want you to be financially healthy too. Last fall, they partnered with the Odessa Family Christian Faith Center to put on a back-to-school backpack program at 87th, and they also provided turkey dinners on Thanksgiving, Aminette said. They hope to find a partner to do the same at Vera. At Christmas time, they partnered with a great number of organizations to make sure every child received gifts, Aminette said. Our staff goes in and sits with each child individually and helps them fill out their wish list. We look at sizes if they don't know their sizes, and our staff hand wraps every present. We made over 500 sugar cookies this year and 12 pounds of buttercream frosting, Aminette said. The Christmas Wishes program started at 87th Street after Aminette told Miller about a child who didn't have a bed. They later realized he didn't have any shoes or underwear either. Miller was immediately reminded of her late son Hunter, who once brought her a drawer full of socks and underwear to donate to a family in need at Christmas time. He'd been inspired by his older brother, Austin, who had donated his lunch money to the same family. Hunter said, "Would this help the little boy? I don't need to wear underwear or socks," Miller said. It was instantly like, "We need to do more. It needs to be bigger. So who else needs something besides this little boy?" The first year they did Christmas Wishes, 168 kids at 87th received gifts, Aminette said. What they've done is create communities at 87th and at Vera, and they are proud of that, the women said. There's a word called NIMBYism, not in my backyard, Miller said. They don't want you to have those people in their backyard. We spent $70 million on Vera. Everybody around here, their taxes just went up. They didn't go down. It's the amenities. It's what you choose to put in. It's the management. It's the rules you have in place. It's the communities and the programs you put in place and what you establish in it. If you give back to the residents, if you build a community, you do not have a project. You have a community, and that makes all the difference in the world. Bond Committee reviews objectives. Ector County ISD Superintendent Scott Murray reviewed the rules for the newly formed Bond Committee and the accomplishments of the district in the last several years on Thursday. Daryl Pearson, a partner and senior client executive at PBK Architects, also spoke to the group. Pearson has worked with the district for several years on several bond elections. About 150 people from across the community and district convened at George H.W. Bush New Tech Odessa Thursday night. The presentation said it's important that committee members attend all the meetings. The next one will be from 6 to 8 p.m. February 16th at NTO. The bond committee could make a recommendation to the Board of Trustees at 6 p.m. June 20th in the boardroom of the administration building. The last day to call a November 2023 bond election is August 21st. Murray went over the charges for the committee, such as receive and review the findings of an updated facilities assessment regarding the physical condition and other aspects of all district facilities. Receive and review the findings of an updated 2022 demographic study of ECISD. Review options for existing, renovated, and/or new facilities and their implications for projected student enrollment, anticipated instructional programs, technology, and related educational specifications, district staff, operations, and costs. Develop and present to the Board of Trustees a plan to serve the district as a baseline for the next 5 years and future facility needs. The goal for doing that is June. The committee, Murray said, should stay away from focusing on recommendations regarding specific design of schools or district facilities, the location of schools or district facilities. Murray said they could talk about generic locations, avoiding specific pieces of property. The Board of Trustees makes those decisions, he said. Don't discuss school boundaries. Those are conversations that the Board of Trustees have. Instructional arrangements and/or education pedagogy, such as grade configurations, and members should refrain from recommending something like converting all schools to Montessori or open classrooms. The decision-making process also was reviewed, along with topics of upcoming meetings, such as financing. Pearson noted that the committee will have a lot of data to absorb. The committee will weigh options, timing, and costs, narrow the list of options for consideration, and reach a consensus, then finalize recommendations and next steps, Pearson said. Guiding principles of the committee is worst is first, with the biggest needs addressed first. Plan for the future. Future-ready facilities, expandable facilities to accommodate future growth, functional equity and operational efficiency, use existing buildings and resources efficiently, equitable access to programs and opportunities. The group was asked if they agreed with the guiding principles. Vice Elementary School music teacher Lisa Music commented on that new technology is good, but too much technology is not quite so good if you're used to what you have and it works. On equitable access, Murray said, we don't want to have haves and have-nots. When something new and state-of-the-art is built, the question of how the district's 33,500 students can have access is an issue, Murray said. Committee member David Durie said, "It looks like the district is going in the right direction." He said he is excited about having students in the group and new comments and new ideas. Executive Director of District Operations Courtney Smith said ECISD has several district-funded projects such as safety and security upgrades, roofing repair and replacement, HVAC equipment repair and flooring repair, restoration and replacement, and ongoing parking and paving improvements. Plumbing improvements are made as needed, site utility testing and line replacement, interior painting, and LED lighting retrofits. Smith said asbestos abatement has been done as needed, and four new career and technology welding labs have been added, as has the 18-plus transition living center, ongoing athletic facility improvements, and new playground equipment have been added. New portable classroom buildings have been installed and equipped. Smith said the district has 100 to 155 of those, and some are double wides. Through the tax ratification election passed in 2018, the district has been able to refresh its bus supply, purchasing 5 or 6 a year, Smith said. The district also has undertaken xeriscape projects and foyer enhancement at campuses. In answer to a committee member's question, Smith said they try to keep the contractors local or do the work in-house. Pearson praised the maintenance department for keeping the buildings looking good, although they are aging. But he said that still masks issues with them. Harmony Home to Celebrate 30 Years by Michael Bauer. For 30 years, Harmony Home Children's Advocacy Center has worked to help minimize the trauma of child abuse through multidisciplinary team investigation, prosecution, and treatment. They'll be celebrating the milestone with an anniversary party next week. The celebration will take place from 6 to 8 p.m. February 2nd at the MCM Elegante. It's 30 years of supporting children who have been physically, sexually abused and neglected, Executive Director of Harmony Home Children's Advocacy Center, Carrie Bronaugh, said. 30 years of team collaboration with law enforcement, CPS, Child Protective Investigators for supporting these children. 30 years of community support and wrapping hands around us so that we can provide the very vital services that we do every day at Harmony Home. There's a lot to celebrate and be thankful for. Harmony Home employs a small group of 18 professionals who help provide healing for abused children in 7 counties throughout West Texas. The nonprofit organization serves over 600 children each year, each a victim of sexual, physical, or emotional abuse and neglect. "We exist to break the silence in child abuse," Bronaugh said. "When we opened our doors in 1993, we had a group of individuals in the community who were hearing a lot of news stories about individuals whose children, who were nonverbal, were talking about babies that were being hurt at the hands of their parents or people who were supposed to be taking care of them. These community members really wanted something different. They knew there was a vital piece missing." Since then, Harmony Home services have grown. Since 2013, the organization has provided community awareness and prevention throughout the Permian Basin by providing evidence-based training to adults on how to react, respond, and report sexual child abuse. In 2019, the organization was able to start its 360-degree approach in prevention by going into the classrooms and helping children in grades K through 5 know and understand the importance of spotting red flags and talking to safe adults. For over 30 years, we've really honed in and perfected the process, Bronaugh said. We've been able to serve 20,000 kids. It's been magical and amazing to serve. I give honor to the individuals who started us. However, there have been challenges over the years that Harmony Home has faced, most recently the pandemic and trying to provide services during lockdown. COVID brought its own challenges, Bronaugh said. Everyone did shut down. We were considered essential from the governor's office. We had to shut down for a short time. For about 2 months, we only opened in case of emergencies. That drastically cut our numbers in half. We were only providing interviews, therapy, and advocacy to the individuals that law enforcement truly felt was an emergency. That ended up hindering a number of children. Our reporting across the city and state went down drastically, Bronaugh said. Our reporting went down 40%. Those were child abuse reports. These children were at home with their abusers, and no one has eyes on them, and behavior changes. After about 2 months, Harmony Home was able to open its doors back up, but its therapy sessions were strictly through teletherapy. It wasn't as utilized as it should have been or could have been, Bronaugh said. The children didn't buy into the teletherapy process. We were low in supporting our children in that aspect. After children were allowed to go back to school, our numbers shot through the roofs. We expected that. Our services increased. In 2021, our services increased by 13%. We've increased our therapy and our support. That's been a huge plus. Next week's event will also be a way for Harmony Home to educate the public on what it does. This event is our way of saying thank you to the community, Bronaugh said. It's also a way to let our community know who we are. If you've never walked through our doors for services, you may not know of the array of our services. If you don't need us, then you probably don't want to know about us. Unfortunately, we live in a world where child abuse isn't talked about as much. It makes people uncomfortable. This event is to educate. By coping and getting the support, these children's nightmare can turn into something beautiful. We want our community to know that, even in the ugliest days, there's a light at the end of the tunnel. The event will include a dinner and cake. We can't have an anniversary without birthday cake, Bronaugh said. We'll have some cupcakes to hand out. Some awards will be handed out to specific individuals. We'll focus on what we're currently doing with our services, as well as a sneak peek of what our future looks like. For more information about the event, go to tinyurl.com/YCK6WVN2. Obituaries for Saturday, January 28th. John Willard Spencer, San Angelo. John Willard Spencer, 80, passed away Tuesday, January 24th, in his hometown of San Angelo. He was born August 20th, 1942, in Chickasha, Oklahoma. John is survived by his wife of 55 years, Sandra, his daughter Angela Nile and husband Brett, and granddaughters McKinley and Molly, his son Matt and wife Valerie. A private family memorial service is planned. Memorials may be sent to Cal Farley's Boys Ranch, Tunnel to Towers, and Wounded Warriors. Family and friends may share condolences and sign the online register book at www.harperfuneralhome.com. John Baxter Latimer. John Baxter Latimer, 62, of Odessa, passed away Monday, January 16th at MD Anderson Cancer Center in Houston after almost a two-year battle with lymphoma. John was born in Colorado City to Curtis E. Latimer and Margaret J. Trulock Latimer, August 9, 1960. He married Stephanie Sivels in 1988. John is survived by his wife of 34 and a half years, Stephanie Sivels Latimer of Odessa, daughter Regan and son-in-law Colton Lammons of Round Rock, brothers Dan and wife Renate Latimer of Auburn, Alabama, Don and wife Rita Latimer of Richardson, father-in-law C. Richard Sivels of Odessa, brother-in-law Tracy and wife Kelly Sivels of Midland, and many first cousins of the Latimer, Trulock, and Majors families, along with many nieces and nephews. A memorial service will be held at First United Methodist Church in Odessa, Thursday, January 26th at 11 a.m. with Reverend Todd Salzwedel officiating. Arrangements by Sunset Memorial Gardens and Funeral Home. Memorials can be made to the Ellen Knoll Art Museum, Battleship Texas Foundation in Houston, United Way of Odessa, or a charity of your choice. Arrangements are entrusted to Sunset Memorial Gardens and Funeral Home. To send condolences to the family, please sign the guest book at www.sunsetodessa.com. Delia Ochoa Morales. Delia Ochoa Morales, 70, of Odessa, passed away Wednesday, January 25th. Rosary will be recited at 7 p.m. Thursday, February 2nd, at Sunset Memorial Gardens and Funeral Home in Odessa. Visitation will be from 6 to 8 p.m. Thursday, February 2nd, at Sunset Memorial Funeral Home. Memorial services will be held at 10 a.m. Friday, February 3rd, at St. Elizabeth Ann Seton Catholic Church, with Father Joe Barbieri officiating. Her ashes will be interred in the church's columbarium. Delia was born in Stanton to Juana Ramirez Ochoa and Arturo Ochoa Sr., August 11, 1952. She married Ignacio Chito Morales in 1971 in Odessa. She is preceded in death by her parents and her sister Alma Castillo of Midland. She is survived by her husband of 52 years, Chito Morales, daughter Denise Morales Kaladzik and her husband Zoran of Corinth, daughter Deanna Jane DJ Morales Urias and husband Lanny LJ of Garland, one grandson. She is also survived by her brother Arturo Ochoa Jr. of Greenwood and Margarita and Trini Sanchez of Garland. Delia's family ask that you consider becoming an organ donor in recognition of her own kidney transplant from a generous life-saving donor 20 years ago. Arrangements are entrusted to Sunset Memorial Gardens and Funeral Home. To send condolences to the family, please sign her guest book at www.sunsetodessa.com. Beverly June Lovell Scott, Austin. Beverly June Scott passed away Friday, November 25th, 2022, at the age of 84. She was born February 13, 1938, in Russellville, Arkansas, to Cloyce Lovell and Evelyn Riley Lovell Branch. Beverly married Gerald Scott in 1958. She is preceded in death by her daughter, Jerry Lynn, her husband, Gerald Scott, her parents, brother, Donnie Lovell, and a granddaughter. She is survived by her sisters, Vicky Ayule and Mickey Twiss, sons Gerald Scott, Charles, and wife Barbara Scott, daughters Diane Lynch and LaDonna Phillips, as well as 7 grandchildren, 12 great-grandchildren, as well as many nieces and nephews. A celebration of life will be held Saturday, February 11th at 10 a.m. in Beverly's hometown of Russellville, Arkansas, at the First Assembly of God. She will be laid to rest alongside her late grandmother, grandfather, mother, father, and brother. Flowers may be sent to First Assembly in Russellville, Arkansas, the week of the celebration. Should you prefer memorial contributions, you may direct them to her favorite ministry, KCM, at www.giving.kcm.org. Death notices. Robert Michael Hunt. Robert Michael Hunt, 46, of Midland, died Wednesday, January 25th in Midland. A funeral service is scheduled for Saturday, February 4th at Mid-City's Neely campus. Visitation will take place from 6 to 8 p.m. Thursday, February 2nd. Arrangements are by Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home of Midland. Michael Bennett Reeves. Michael Bennett Reeves, 46, of Odessa, died Friday, January 20th in Odessa. A celebration of life is scheduled for 2 p.m. January 29th at Cashway West. Arrangements are by Acres West Funeral Chapel of Odessa. Trevor Lee Smith. Trevor Lee Smith, 20, died Sunday, January 22nd in Odessa. Services are pending with Acres West Funeral Chapel.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the Odessa American for Monday, January 30th. Promoting health and wellness. ECISD Clinic making strides. Almost a year in, the Ector County ISD Health and Wellness Center has seen steady activity but is still working to attract patients. Quote, we have posters throughout our campuses reconfirming and reminding our staff, their participants in our medical plan, they are eligible to use the Wellness Center at no cost. If they are participants of the medical plan, Option 3 HSA, Health Savings Account, they only have to pay a $25 copay, Benefits and Risk Management Director Yolanda Gordon said. The clinic opened to ECISD staff and families February 28, 2022. However, its first full day was March 1st. Treatments and services include things like adult immunization, allergies, asthma, annual physicals, treatment for colds, congestion, and flu, diabetic education and management's high blood pressure, high cholesterol, treatment for minor injuries, thyroid disorders, and well women exams. If there is an additional service that's needed, Gordon said the Wellness Center staff handles the referral process. Women can be referred for mammograms, but they also have mammogram evening events for staff members twice a year in the Midland area and the Odessa area. Quote, this is going into our second year where we promote health and awareness. We have campaigns that we participate in with our wellness center. We do campaigns on a monthly basis, Gordon said. For January, information on getting in better shape was provided. Quote, our management team is Care ATC. We meet with them weekly, and they provide us educational tools. They provide us bulletins, newsletters, that we forward to our district staff through our newsletters, which we distribute monthly on the third Friday of every month, Gordon said. The big part of having a wellness center for our first year was the educational piece, making sure that the staff understood that we encouraged them to utilize the Wellness Center. It's at no cost to them or a very minimal copay, and this is so that we can assist them in becoming more aware of their well-being, Gordon said. There is also a licensed clinical social worker at the Wellness Center. Quote, "We focus not only on the physical well-being, but on the mental well-being," Gordon said. She added that they still participate in the Employment Assistance Program, which provides 6 mental health clinical visits for employees and their families. However, this part, the licensed clinical social worker, we put in place because we do know that there is a greater need than there was before. With our wellness center in place, it only made sense that we keep the well-being of our staff members as well as their family members by providing this service. This is something that we're very proud of because it's a matter of just giving her a call. We have virtual visits and on-site visits on Tuesdays, Wednesdays, and Thursdays, she said. With their management team, they had a webinar in December on how to beat the holiday blues. Gordon said a lot of what they try to do is make people aware that they are not alone and they are going to do everything they can to keep them physically and mentally healthy. She added that their jobs take a lot of teachers, counselors, food service, custodial, and transportation workers, everyone on staff. Quote, "We want them to know that we're available and we're routinely making surveys and checking to see how we can better our service. We are basically always providing educational and training tools to our staff so that they can feel comfortable in knowing that the whole purpose of our wellness center is to assist them health-wise and keep them mentally and emotionally well," Gordon said. "We now know that social-emotional learning is a very big part of our function. We know that if we're not happy mentally, it's going to be very difficult to stay healthy, so we incorporate the two," she said. They use mapping tools to give them an idea of how utilization is increasing each month. "It's being monitored on a monthly basis, and once we have the full year complete, we'll have better projections, the ability to show how we've grown in educating our staff and family members to the services that we provide there," Gordon said. She noted that use has increased each month, and every month they meet to go over the numbers and review surveys. Quote, "You know how when you go to a doctor's office, they send you a survey after, we provide that as well. Once our staff members or family members go, they're given the option of rating that visit, and we build off of that. We've had really positive feedback. If we see that something's not making sense, we always investigate it, and then we try to fix that before it becomes a problem," Gordon said. She added that they take the surveys seriously. Quote, "It's very important as to how we're going to build the benefits that we provide," she said. "People can still go anywhere for their doctor's visits, immunizations, or whatever they need. However, Gordon wants people to know that the Health and Wellness Center offers a zero copay." Quote, "When you weigh having a $50 copay to see your regular doctor or zero copay, sometimes it makes it a lot easier as to where you go," Gordon said. "What we had noticed when we were looking to establish the Health and Wellness Center was that there were a lot of doctors and doctor's offices that were 2 or 3 weeks out. With our center, we've set it up to where we will see them as soon as the next available appointment. If you get on our website or the apps, or they can call a 1-800 number, they can set up that appointment as it's convenient to them," Gordon said. The 800 number is 800-993-8244. She added that a doctor's visit can cost $225 or more. quote, "We try to accommodate the schedules of our teachers, of our food service, of transportation. We're constantly reviewing our hours of operation to make sure we don't have to tweak them. After the first full year, we'll know what we need to do. If we need to adjust those time slots to accommodate more of our teachers because, of course, they're in classrooms. We have our bus drivers constantly driving, so we want to make sure that we are continuously growing and accommodating their needs," she added. Their goal is that once they have completed a full first year, the utilization numbers will be made available to the board of directors, and then they will be made public. Her goal is to have 80 to 95% utilization. The center is located at 221 North Sam Houston Avenue. Quote, "We're centered in the medical district. We're super excited about its location because if there have to be referrals, our physician and our nurse practitioners are doing all the referrals. They do the prescription call-ins. They do the follow-up on medications. There's so much that we're doing to help our staff members that have to run around," Gordon said. She added that the Wellness Center's goal is to get the patient seen in a timely manner. The first visit will always take more time because they are gathering critical information to maintain patients' health records. Quote, "From that point forward, it's just really a quick overview, checkup, and you're on your way," Gordon said. The Wellness Center has two nurse practitioners, a physician, and two medical assistants. The center has three examining rooms, a triage room, and a lab and supply room, and a large waiting area. There also is an office for the mental health professional. Quote, "The atmosphere is very pleasant. I am so thankful for the staff that supports that. We continuously provide that positive feedback to our Wellness Center team because they're an important part of what we do," Gordon said. She said the surveys that are returned note the friendly staff and those reviews are passed on to the staff. Quote, "Care ATC takes care of the hiring process. We still have a lot of input into the important roles like the doctor's offices, the nurse practitioners. We get to have a visit with them before they actually do the hiring to make sure that it's a good fit. My goal is always to make sure they understand that the intent is to keep our staff healthy. Now, does that mean that everybody's going to be nice? Maybe not. But we want to be sure that they feel that the goal is to provide a service that we didn't have before," Gordon said. She added that she continues to encourage staff to use the Wellness Center. Quote, "We've put up posters in our teachers' lounges throughout our administration building. We have them in all the lounges here, like the dining area, and we even have it on every floor where we have them framed, thanks to Mike Adkins in communications. We have continuously provided those very important pieces that make it fit together. However, we know out of sight, out of mind, so we continuously promote the Wellness Center. We're hoping that maybe this year, it being the breakthrough year, then the years to come will be so much stronger and utilization and the understanding of what it's there for," she said. Here are some Odessa American quick hits. Cassette String Quartet. The Ector County Library Children's Department, 321 West 5th Street, will present the Cassette String Quartet from 4:30 p.m. to 5:30 p.m. today. Chris Van Dusen's book, Circus Ship, will be read aloud, and the quartet will use their music to enhance the story. Visit tinyurl.com/33625270RY. Exhibition. Midland College, 3600 North Garfield Street in Midland, has scheduled an exhibition of paintings by Nancy Bernard from 8 a.m. to 10 p.m. Monday to Thursday and from 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. Friday through February 17th. For more information, email rbell@midland.edu. Bingo and Bubbly Ladies Luncheon. Harmony Home Children's Advocacy Center has scheduled a Bingo and Bubbly Ladies Luncheon at 11 a.m. March 3rd at the Odessa Marriott Hotel and Conference Center, 305 East 5th Street. There will be champagne reception, silent auction, lunch, and bingo to help put an end to child abuse in the Permian Basin. Tickets start at $200. Sponsorships are available. To sponsor, for tickets or more information, visit tinyurl.com/mtdwjc6k. Shamrock Run 5K. The City of Odessa has scheduled a Shamrock 5K run on March 11th at Comanche Trail Park, 900 South County Road West. Registration will start at 9 a.m. and the race will start at 10 a.m. Tickets start at $40. For more information or to purchase tickets, visit tinyurl.com/YANT9D2F. Take Me Fishing. Odessa Parks and Recreation has scheduled a fishing event March 25th at the Comanche Trail Park Pond, 301 West I-20. Registration will open at 10 a.m. and the event will end at 2 p.m. Visit tinyurl.com/YZZMREU. Wild at Heart Boot Camp. Stonegate Fellowship has scheduled a Wild at Heart Boot Camp from 6:30 a.m. March 31st to 5 p.m. April 2nd at Moe Ranch, 2229 FM 1340 in Wink. Tickets are $150 and include transportation, food, lodging, and materials. For more information or to purchase tickets, visit tinyurl.com/2HW8TE7K.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.